information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight,
we care.
Appear to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Our cities used to be such a beautiful place. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Media Monarchy. It's episode 221, June 17th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, homesick signs and wonders, psychic stroke, circumcision, and Chrislam. Digital flags, hot particles, solar threats, hack attacks, and jetpacks. Dirty Dozen and the Stumptown sellout, pesticide poisoned in the pyramid plate. The Godfather of Rap. A super-sized news purge, plus all the latest alt-media from New World Next Week, Corbett Report, Peace Revolution, Remedy Radio, Ground Zero, so much more. Episode 221 from MediaMonarchy.com.
I walk down my street, you see me home in the end. Now there's spray paint on the walls. I see a house that at one time was nice, but now it is abandoned. There's nothing left at all. So why, yeah, it must mean that our chances fly.
Pennywise, Homesick. That's the second track from their 1993 album Unknown Road, and I sure mowed a lot of lawns to that album back in the day. But it's here, and it's now, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the long-awaited episode 221 from Media Monarchy. It's June 17th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Since 9/11/05, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And as always, we are broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and of course, simulcast live on zeropointradio.com and revereradio.net. Huge thanks to those independent alternative media outlets and all the others that share and syndicate and spread the word about this show. We also like to thank Radio23.org for the extra hosting, in addition to our archive.org as well as RadioForAll.net. And of course, FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Gmail, Skype, all those sites and so many more. Media Monarchy as the keyword or username. And I gotta say, it's a little bit of negative reinforcement. Huge thanks to all the folks who donated during our previous two-week hiatus from the live show. Yes, we still posted news. Yes, we still did some of our other media appearances, and even more to tell you about. But a huge thanks to IsisRC.com in Washington, Stephen in Davie, Florida, Anthony in Ontario, John in Mars Hill, North Carolina, and a huge thanks to the generous donations from John in Santa Maria, California, Eric in Rockport, Massachusetts, Kevin in Amherst, New York, and the repeat donations from my man Samuel in Belgium, and last but certainly not least, Sexy Love from MidnightRiders.com. So, without setting up a subscription button, and it's something that's been discussed, and if you follow this show and if you follow Corbett Report or PeaceRevolution.org and some of the other fantastic alternative media outlets that we are proud and humbled enough to be associated with, let me know what you guys think. Send me an email, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. Should we set up some type of recurring donation, a small monthly donation that will automatically happen? Discuss. So we're here. We're back. I don't like to deviate from my schedule too much because then it's hard to get back into the groove of things. It's easy to backslide. That's why I've always been a fan of live radio or live theater or those type of productions that have a deadline that, you know, 8 o'clock, the curtain goes up, or 10 a.m., you're live on the air. So there's so much to go over. We're going to cram it all into this 2 hours in the best that we can. I'm hyper-caffeinated. And it was a beautiful morning until the chemtrails hit, or the geoengineering, or the jet trails, contrails, whatever they are. Clear sky early this morning, overcast as the clouds spread. And we asked the question, what in the world are they spraying? We glance at the breaking news again on this Friday, June 17th, 2011, just after 10 a.m. Pacific time. Defying military crackdown, protesters surge across Syria. Pro-Gaddafi forces hit Misrata. NATO targets Tripoli. And yes, of course, all the important news about the Casey Anthony trial and Wienergate and Green Lantern. No. We'll touch on those stories as they may relate to the larger scheme, the shell game, the predictive programming, the shadows on the wall. Call it what you want. We're here to try and lay down a path. I don't have all the answers by any stretch. But hopefully we can arm you with a lot of data that you can hopefully then take it a step further and turn it into knowledge or wisdom. And you gotta share it back. But a story that is in the list that we will get to at some point in this episode 221 has been updated, as it is a breaking story right now. Wouldn't you know it, the Pentagon scare suspect has been ID'd as a Marine reservist. What a surprise. So, the first chunk here, we're going to go over all the amazing alternative media from, again, the sites and shows and hosts and producers that we're proud enough to be associated with. On the first Wednesday of every month, I join my man, Bob Tuscan, bobtuscan.com, for his show on oraclebroadcasting.com. And, of course, Bob connected to the Intel Hub and all those great guys. This month's appearance covers the death of Gil Scott-Heron and conscious music. We're going to touch on that topic a little later. And we ask the question, is the Willis Tower, you may know it as the Sears Tower, is it being set up for a false flag attack? Plus, all the latest in food and tech and God and more. The June appearance of Media Monarchy on the Bob Tuscan Show, available, edited down, just the audio portion, and it's all put up on youtube.com/Media Monarchy, where we're edging towards 2,000 subscribers. So if you're not over there, please hop over there. And speaking of Chicago's Willis Tower, the Sears Tower, and the story I tell on the Bob Tuscan Show that we get into in greater detail, I'll briefly mention right here. Flipping through the newspaper at work, I saw an article in the New York Times about the sky deck, or the ledge, at the Willis Tower. And it immediately reminded me of the Bee Thing, the Israeli spy-connected, quote-unquote, art project, the Bee Thing, where they allegedly built a ledge outside the World Trade Center. The memes and the reminders and the connections between Silverstein, and then tie in Rahm Emanuel, tie in the terror drills, tie in the private intelligence and insurance industrial complex. And it's a recipe for a setup. So it inspired me to write an original piece, and it's on MediaMonarchy.com, Chicago's Willis Tower on the ledge with echoes of the World Trade Center. Fortunately, that kind of came together pretty quickly, and I'd like to do a lot more of that original writing. And while we're mentioning that, I'll still put out the call for anybody who has a little bit of web savvy, who wants to help post news to sites in the kingdom in any kind of area or topic you can hone in on, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. We also had the triumphant return of New World Next Week, my weekly video series with James Corbett. This latest episode goes over daily dosimeters, solar storms, and hack attacks. All of those topics contained in this episode you're soaking in right now. NewWorldNextWeek.com has high-quality, low-quality video and the audio only, and just another great way to spread this show that, again, is getting played on the Sky satellite thanks to ParadigmShift.tv. Amazing. Your support helps keep all of these things going. So, of course, in our time away, on our hiatus, there were still all kinds of other alternative media coming out, so we have quite a few episodes to mention and to read into the record and to hopefully whet your appetite that as we go through these things, you'll go, oh, that topic interests me. I want to go check that out. Like episode 188 from CorbettReport.com, listening to the enemy. Figuring out what the global power elite are trying to accomplish requires no crystal ball or decoder ring. They say it openly, every day, in speeches and publications that are freely available to the public. Episode 188 dives into the enemy propaganda to see if we can find what the oligarchs are thinking and maybe what they're planning to do next. Posted along on this episode is James's interview with The Real Plato, who you can find on twitter.com/TheRealPlato, which every time I look at it, I think I see my last name. But The Real Plato is on tour across the country on the first Bitcoin road trip. And I believe he will be coming by the People's Republic of Oregon very soon, so look for some kind of contact or interview or something to come with The Real Plato here soon on Media Monarchy. However, episode 189 from Corbett Report, Choose Life. The psychopathic elite have presented before us life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that us and our seed may live. posted along with this episode 189, Choose Life, are all the other videos, interviews from CorbettReport.com, NATO to extend Libyan campaign by 90 days, and the background previews and predictions on Bilderberg 2011, the recent elite meeting that they can't hide anymore. Plus interviews with Dennis Rancourt, Adrian Salbucci, Mark Russell, and Bob Chapman. In the most recent episode, 190, listener feedback. On this episode, James Corbett dips into the mailbag to answer questions, acknowledge suggestions, respond to disagreements, and bask in positive feedback from the listener. That, of course, is tongue-in-cheek. But all the other latest videos posted along with episode 190, the Sunday Update, now produced in conjunction with GlobalResearch.ca, the U.S. agent in the Mumbai massacre, of course referring to David Headley. Plus, Obama's hypocrisy whistleblowers line up to take back the Transparency Award. That video produced in conjunction with Sibel Edmonds and the Boiling Frogs. Plus, the recent appearance of James on Russia Today, Fukushima, 3 months in, all that, so much more amazing alternative media from, as far as I can tell, the hardest working independent man in the alternative media, CorbettReport.com, and a ton of great new work from my man Richard Grove and all the fantastic folks at TragedyAndHope.com. Episode 29, Metaphors of Liberation, The Wisdom of Gullible's Travels, getting into Jonathan Swift and Mickey Mouse. Episode 30, The Fire of Corruption in Education, John Taylor Gatto and Henrik Palmgren, of course, of Red Ice Radio. Their recent interview, getting into, of course, the education that has been stolen away from us systematically. Episode 31, Connect the Dots, See the Big Picture, the fifth anniversary of Project Constellation. That was Richard Grove's initial sort of virtual message in a bottle. And that's where I first became aware of his story and reached out to him pretty close to around that point again, and am so humbled to be connected to peacerevolution.org. Episode 32, How College Subverts Students, Dumbing Us Down for Profit and Power. If you haven't checked out peacerevolution.org, it's the number one higher education podcast on Podomatic, and you may notice a theme through just those brief episode titles and descriptions. It is about education, but it's about teaching you how to fish, not giving you a fish, and then making you come back to get that next level of fish. We also have posted up the first 5 episodes of RemedyRadio.com from Paul Verge of DivergentFilms.com, the creator of Hijacking Humanity, Believers Beware. You may have seen him on the first episode of What You've Been Missing. But it's his most recent media venture, Remedy Radio, audio, video, podcast. We have the first 5 episodes posted up. Fulfilling Needs, The Power of Communication is the first episode. Healing Thyself, Let Food Be Thine Medicine, episode 2. Episode 3, Education, Learning Our Way to Peace and Freedom. Episode 4, 20, How Hemp Can Save Humanity. And episode 5, Becoming Your Own Media Monarchy. That's right, yours truly joined Paul Verge and the rest of the folks of RemedyRadio.com to discuss how to do this, essentially. And I believe I tell lots of interesting kind of back-end stories, so if you want to hear kind of where I'm coming from, my upbringing, what got me here, it's all contained in there. And again, you can listen to it audio only, or you can check out the fine production from Paul Verge and RemedyRadio.com. This is the best spot to mention that myself and Paul Verge and Richard Grove and Lisa Arbacheski of TragedyAndHope.com. We have shot, it is in the can, the pilot episode of NavigatingNetflix.com. The brand new show coming very soon from Media Monarchy and Tragedy and Hope. The show designed to prioritize your time for movies that feed your mind. There are so many things, so many diamonds in the rough in Netflix that they're not going to put on the front page. This is going to be our sort of book club, our sort of movie review show. I'm really excited about it. This is getting more to what I feel like I'm knowledgeable about and comfortable with. I think I've made the jokes about, can't really go on at length about any sort of geopolitical situation. But I can talk about film and predictive programming for quite some time because, again, as I tell you, we discuss in my episode on RemedyRadio.com. I spent a lot of time growing up in bookstores and record stores and looking at liner notes and credits. NavigatingNetflix.com. The first episode, the pilot episode, coming very soon, and it is called The Experiment. Now, if you want to get a little bit ahead, the NavigatingNetflix.com site is up. It's still under construction, but I made it all myself. And on the page, you can find a list of some of the films that we are going to review and analyze. So, your cue, if you will, you can get ahead, you can watch some of those films, and even more so, you can take the plunge and join the TragedyAndHope.com community. The episodes are all going to be free, as so many of the things that we do in the alternative media. The shows are for free. They always have been. They always will be. But if you want to get involved and you want to make requests and you want to go deeper and you want to connect with other like-minded people and not just the inane drivel and babble you'll find on all of the overcrowded social networks, you can join the TragedyAndHope.com community. On all those episodes of Peace Revolution, you can find a free invitation link to get you in, to check it out, and that's where you'll find the Navigating Netflix group, where we post up ideas and discuss films, some of which we will discuss on the show. So needless to say, I'm super excited about it. NavigatingNetflix.com. Our final blast of alternative media from our favorite hosts with the most, my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org, going strong on his new time slot on KXL here in Portland, Oregon. 101.1 FM, formerly the home of the rock station. But because the listeners, but because the audience spoke out, they brought him back on the new station, on the talk station, prime time, 3 hours, every weeknight. And we have the links. You can listen live. We have the links. You can subscribe to the podcast. Every episode has an article, like Area 51, Cold Raw Facts, This Space for Sale, The Red and the Undead, Something Stinks at Skunk Works, Trapped in the Evolving Door, The Shadow of Kubrick's Legacy, Nazi Lunatic Outpost, Alternative Third Realm, H+, Trans Post-Humanity, The Big Bilderberg Barbecue Bash, The Great Work Shall Be Accomplished, Mormon Vogue, UFOs, Politics, and the White Horse Prophecy, Maxwell's Hammer was last night's episode, June 16th, featuring the one and only Jordan Maxwell. And again, I think I've tried to impress upon you how awesome it is to have Clyde and GroundZeroMedia.org live on a mainstream FM talk station, bringing guests like Jordan Maxwell to the masses. Now, I think that sets us up quite nicely to transition into all the latest from the latest site in the growing media monarchy kingdom. It's called HolyHexes.com. A normal human being does not want the kingdom of heaven. He wants life on earth to continue. That quote from George Orwell is the sort of motto of HolyHexes.com. And we begin with one of many articles from GodDiscussion.com. Pastor says two eclipses in June are biblical signs and wonders.
I have to stop again. Here's another powerful prophecy alert. This month of June is going to be so significant for Christians, Jews, and Muslims. Let me tell you why. Look at the signs in the heavens, the signs in the sun, the signs in the stars. God has things going in His perfect design. He's the creator of all things. Now, yesterday, May 31st, 2011, that was the one-year anniversary of the flotilla accident. Remember that incident that took place a year ago? The flotilla that was raided by the Israelis, stopping the weapons from coming into Gaza there in the Mediterranean? That was a year ago yesterday. Today, June 1st, 2011, and tomorrow, there will be a new moon. If you can find it in Psalms 19, but I want to explain to you, that new moon tonight is a midnight. Give me one second, my notes here. It's a midnight solar eclipse of the sun is also going to happen. So it's a new moon, and it's a solar eclipse of the sun that takes place at midnight on June 1st. Now, on June 3rd, the Palestinians will continue to rally and protest. They've scheduled June 3rd, June 5th, and June 7th for protesting. Follow that up in the middle of all that, June 5th. That's right. June 5th is the Palestinian. June 5th is the 44th commemoration of the Palestinian expulsion from Israel. But also today, on June 1st, even though there's going to be a midnight solar eclipse, today is Jerusalem Day, the 44th anniversary of the liberation of Jerusalem. Are you serious? Are you serious? Yes. The same day they celebrate that, the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama, is saying, "Give back half of Jerusalem." What? Are you serious? You think they're going to do that? That's not going to happen, dude. Now, wait a minute. And then, June 7th, this is going to be the continuing Palestinian Intifada. June 13th, for the Christians, focus on this. That is the Pentecost. That is, once again, the anniversary of Pentecost, which you can find in Acts chapter 2. And then there's June 15th, the total blood red moon over Israel. It's going to happen on the night of June 15th, right over the land of Israel, a sign of impending judgment, a blood red moon over Jerusalem on the 15th of June. Are you saved? These are biblical signs in the skies. You can find this in Luke chapter 21, verses 25. There will be signs in the sun, signs in the moon, signs in the stars. Distress of nations, and the roaring of the waves and the sea. It's all happening. This has been a prophecy alert.
And, of course, summer solstice is just a few days away. But continuing on HolyHexes.com, leader of the May/October 21st Doomsday Movement suffers a stroke. And we include the link at the top, asking the question from ChristianPost.com, is Harold Camping stroke a sign from God? Now, just because we include links and we include headlines does not mean we endorse them. So when these things get tweeted out or put out on the social networks, you'll find the comments saying, "What? Why would you say, you know?" I know you guys have the discernment, but it's difficult out there with all of that noise. But from Belief Blog, Harold Camping, the leader of the apocalyptic movement that predicted the end of the world would begin on May 21st, has suffered a stroke. According to a statement on the ministry's website on Tuesday, Camping suffered a mild stroke last Thursday. According to the statement posted on the website of FamilyRadio.com, Camping's California-based broadcast ministry, Mr. Camping is receiving excellent care. For months, Camping predicted that Jesus Christ would return to the earth on May 21st and that a select 2-3% of the world's population would be raptured or taken to heaven. Those left behind would face months of tribulation before perishing in the earth's destruction, which Camping said would happen on October 21st. Camping, who is reported to be 89, spread the word through a national billboard campaign and caravan of RVs that toured the country, spreading the doomsday message. When his prediction failed to pan out, Camping took to the airwaves to say that he had misinterpreted the nature of the rapture, but that the world would still end on October 21st. We've always said October 21st was the day. I believe we've mentioned the connections of Comet Elenin, perhaps, to that time of year. Signs and wonders, indeed. A witchy town's worry. Do too many psychics spoil the brew? This interesting article from the New York Times notes that, like any good psychic, Barbara Zafransky claims she foresaw the problems coming. Her prophecy came in 2007, as the city council was easing its restrictions on the number of psychics allowed to practice in the seaside city in Massachusetts, where self-proclaimed witches, angels, clairvoyants, and healers still flock 319 years after the notorious Salem witch trials. Some hoped for added revenues from extra licenses and tourists. Others just wanted to bring underground psychics into the light. But just as Ms. Zafransky predicted, the number of psychic licenses has drastically increased to 75 today, up from a mere handful in 2007. And now Ms. Zafransky, some fellow psychics, and city officials worry the city is on psychic overload. It's like little ants running all over the place trying to get a buck, she grumbled. Zafransky, age 75, who quit her job as an accountant in 91 to open Angelica of the Angels, a store that sells angel figurines and crystals and provides psychic readings. She says she's lost business since the licensing change. Many of them are not trained. They don't understand that when you do a reading, you hold a person's life in your hands. Christian Day, a warlock who calls himself the Kathy Griffin of witchcraft, thinks the competition is good for Salem. I want Salem to be the Las Vegas of psychics, said Mr. Day, who used to work in advertising and helped draft the 2007 regulations. Since they went into effect, he has opened two stores, Hex and Omen, at SalemHex.com and OmenSalem.com. Witchy towns worry, spoiling the brew. Now, an article from The Spirited Atheist, which is a blog on The Washington Post, was brought to my attention during our conversation on the taping of the pilot episode of Navigating Netflix. The film is a take on the Stanford prison experiment, so the connections are there to Abu Ghraib as well as pedophile priests. But the Catholic Church has blamed all that abuse on the devil and the hippie 60s. The study, conducted by the John Jay College of Criminal Justice of the City University of New York at a cost of $1.8 million, mainly borne by the church and Catholic organizations, relied heavily on data provided by the church. The report suggests that Catholic priests who came of age in the 40s and 50s were unprepared for the sexual revolution of the 60s, lost their ethical moorings, and violated children because of the confusion and stress created by an altered society and sexual climate. I'll buy just one part of that theory, the part about priests being unprepared not only for the greater sexual openness of the 60s, but also for any understanding of the importance of pleasurable, consensual sex in adult life. Karen Terry, the report's principal investigator and dean of research and strategic partnerships at John Jay College, said in an interview that although the number of abuse cases rose in the 60s, she could not say with any certainty whether many cases from the 1920s through the 50s went unreported. Was there more abuse in the 50s than we reported in our graph? No doubt. However, there is still an increase in the 60s. That's been shown each year the data has come in. No doubt is the understatement of this century and the last, and we provide the link for you. You can download that full report, The Causes and Context of Sexual Abuse of Minors by United States Catholic Priests, 1950 to 2010. Psych! Police in Texas are investigating whether a tip-off from a woman claiming to be a psychic that sparked a hunt for a mass grave of dismembered bodies, including the children, was a hoax.
Earlier today, we received information that indicated there were perhaps the remains of some children contained on this property here that we were investigating. With the assistance of various agencies out here at the scene, We were able to search the premises after the arrival of a search warrant. And we have no indication that there are, in fact, any bodies located in the residence, the shed, or any property here at this scene. We also have officers who are attempting to locate and interview the person who had originally contacted us. And we hope to further our investigation and find out where she obtained her information from. Some of the information that was provided to us did specifically match information that we found here at the scene. That is the driving force that kept us furthering our investigation. Again, at this time, there are no bodies that have been recovered. There is no indication that any type of homicide has occurred here. We feel confident that we have investigated this part of the scene as much as we can. The rest of it will be investigating how this person obtained this information.
Officers raided a rural farmhouse in Hardin, northeast of Houston, after receiving a report that up to 30 bodies were hidden inside. But police gave up the search hours later after nothing untoward had been found. There's no crime scene, said Liberty County Judge Craig McNair. His deputies, Texas Rangers, and FBI agents ended their fruitless search that was beamed live to millions on national TV. Captain Rex Evans, spokesman for the Liberty County Sheriff's Office, said the woman, who twice called in the tip, would be investigated for making a false report. We now reach the June 16th Pop a Culture News Purge on Holy Hexes, Circumcision, Chrislam, and the New World Airport. San Francisco is going to vote on the banning of circumcision this fall. And we have the link to an NPR story, and this story was sent to me from Barbara, who I hadn't quite connected it. Is there a wiener meme going on? Meanwhile, Belgians molested by Catholic priests who file suit against the Vatican. That comes from Faith World blog on Reuters. Meanwhile, on GodDiscussion.com, Jack Van Impe splits with the Trinity Broadcasting Network over demonic interfaith and apostasy accusations. And I'll mention before we briefly dive into this story, I grew up hearing a lot of this guy, Jack Van Impe. He's got a late-night TV show, televangelist, has been a preacher. I think my dad even said the opening prayer at some big church gathering that he was at many decades ago now. But I even remember an 8-track tape that we had that was a Jack Van Impe lecture. The coming war with Russia. This would be in the early 80s, and the commies are going to get us. Jack Van Impe, who focuses on end times preaching, has parted ways with the Trinity Broadcasting Network over his characterization of apostate ministers who embrace what he calls Chrislam. Chrislam is an interfaith outreach. Van Impe accused Rick Warren, author of The Purpose-Driven Life of the Saddleback Church, and Robert Schuller of the Crystal Cathedral of practicing apostasy due to their outreach to Muslims. Van Impe says that interfaith alliances are tied to demonic powers described in the Book of Revelation. I like Chrislam. I like any sort of portmanteau, Natalie Portmanteau, if you will. Our last couple headlines on the pop culture, Dark Secrets of Scientology to be exposed on Link TV. This would be just a further exposure of the cult of Scientology. Of course, the Sweeney and BBC pieces referenced within this new documentary. And our last note, the Denver International Airport, rife with phallic symbols. This story, unfortunately, comes from the Huffington Post, and it's about a guy named William Tapley, who apparently was put on Anderson Cooper's ridiculous list because He was exposing, of course, all the bizarre occult things surrounding the New World Airport, or the Denver International Airport. So those videos are connected, and you can check them out for yourself. Phallic symbols of the Denver International Airport and porn at the Denver International Airport. But our final post this week on holyhexes.com, I think in a lot of ways, and I think it shows why I'm trying to drive more towards the media memes angle that I'm better versed at. Because I think my track record shows that I can put stuff on the record and then several months later I'll go, ah, see, I told you that was going to be something. Parker and Stone laugh last. The Book of Mormon, which we reported to you here many months ago, won a record 9 Tony Awards. And I learned that the Tony Awards, which are the theater awards, are actually the Antoinette Perry Awards for Excellence in Theater. The irreverent and hilarious Book of Mormon musical dominated the 65th annual Tony Awards this past Sunday, while other folks, so yeah, you had your choice of silly bread and circus. You could watch the theater one or you could watch the sport one. They won the award for Best Musical and became one of the most honored productions in Broadway history. Broadway neophytes Trey Parker and Matt Stone thanked their South Park fans and the audiences who are packing the show. You guys made this show what it is, and therefore you're going to have to atone for it one day. He went on to jokingly thank the co-writer who passed away, Mr. Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon religion. He couldn't be here tonight, but you did it, Joseph. You got the Tony. The three-hour ceremony served as a build-up to the foregone conclusion that the boisterous, profane, and yes, surprisingly sweet production would win the big award. The Book of Mormon won 9 Tonys after receiving 14 nominations. Only The Producers, with 12 wins, and South Pacific, with 10 wins, have taken home more Tonys. The Book of Mormon was written by South Park co-creators Parker and Stone, who created South Park, and Robert Lopez, co-creator of the irreverent Tony-winning musical Avenue Q. Nikki M. James, who won as Best Featured Actress in a Musical for her role as Nabalungi, thanked Parker, Stone, and Lopez, quote, for writing the most incredible show, the funniest and most beautiful heartfelt musical that's changing the face of American musical theater. Depending on which way you look at it, yes, that statement is true. And we're not necessarily here to praise or belittle or otherwise break down what exactly is going on here. But I do love the way that these guys can pretty much go into any medium and go, hey, let's do this thing, and we'll do it better and funnier and bigger than anybody else, and we're out. So the crazy update to this after the win, tickets have now soared to $487 as the Book of Mormon musical breaks Broadway records. I've never seen a Broadway show. I'm not too concerned about it. As I think Marge says on The Simpsons once, oh, I always dreamed of being in a Broadway audience. Because it's about the spectacle. Not so much about the stories of our lives. Now, having said all that, we'll bring it into our Holy Hexes coverage by playing one live cut from the Tonys, from the Book of Mormon. This is going to hurt you as much as it hurts me, I believe.
Well, I tried to be the best. So what happened? My family and friends all said I was blessed. So what happened? It was supposed to be all so exciting to be teaching of Christ across the sea. But I allowed my faith to be shaken. Oh, what's the matter with me? I've always longed to help the needy, to do the things I never dared. This was the time for me to step up. So then why was I so scared? A warlord who shoots people in the face. What's so scary about that? I must trust that my Lord is mightier and always has my back. Now I must be completely devout. I can't have even one shred of doubt. I believe that the Lord God created the universe. I believe that he sent his only son to die for my sins. And I believe that ancient Jews built boats and sailed to America. I am a Mormon, and Mormon trust. You cannot just believe partway. You have to believe in it all. My problem was doubting the Lord's will. Instead of standing tall, I can't allow myself to have any doubt. It's time to set my worries free. Time to show the world what Elder Price is about and share the power inside of me. I believe that God has a plan for all of us. I believe that plan involves me getting my own planet. And I believe that the current president of the church, Tom Monson, speaks directly to God. I am a Mormon, and dang it, a Mormon just believes. I know that I must go and do the things my God commands. I realize now why He sent me here. You ask the Lord in faith, He will always answer you. Just believe in Him and have no fear.
Turn around! We have an intruder! He just walked right into camp!
I believe that Satan has a hold of you. I believe that the Lord God has sent me here. And I believe that in 1978 God changed His mind about black people.
Black people!
You can be a Mormon.
A Mormon who just believes.
What the f*** is this?
This is the moment I was born to do. And I feel so incredible to be sharing my faith with you. The scriptures say that if you ask in faith, if you ask God Himself, you'll know. But you must ask Him without any doubt and let your spirit grow. Know it's all true, you'll just feel it.
You'll be a Mormon, and by gosh, a Mormon daughter just believes. A Mormon just believes.
Oh, I believe.
I
There is, of course, a lot to love about that, but there's also a lot to hate. I hate that nasally, theatery, glee style of singing. But there you go. If you are otherwise not going to check out any bit of that, that is, I believe, the flagship song from the Book of Mormon. Ladies and gentlemen, that sets the stage for a shift of gears on this episode 221 from Media Monarchy over to cyberspacewar.com, one of the many sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. And as we are coming off a two-week hiatus from the live show, so much news to go over, and some of this we'll be going back to, yes, even the end of May. But it all connects. Cyber attack targets Lockheed Martin. Hackers launched a significant and tenacious cyber attack on Lockheed Martin, a major defense contractor holding highly sensitive information, but its secrets remain safe, the company said. Lockheed Martin, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Pentagon confirmed that the contractor's information systems had come under attack. And that was just the latest. And there is more. But we note, you should get ready for false flag attacks. Is the new Cyber Command policy to open the public's eyes, or is the only eye open the one at the top of the pyramid? An article from Rob Call on Op-Ed News. Get ready for digital false flag attacks about the Pentagon's move to codify cyber war with equivalence policy. If a cyber attack produces the death, damage, destruction, or high-level disruption that a traditional military attack would cause, then it would be a candidate for a use of force consideration, which could merit retaliation. Simply an eye for an eye. As we noted for you previously on the show, they want to fight the net. They put that on paper. but in reaction to the recent wave of hack attacks, that it's an act of war. But then, what do we make of this from The Guardian? One in four hackers is an FBI informer. The underground world of computer hackers has been so thoroughly infiltrated in the U.S. by the FBI and Secret Service that it's now riddled with paranoia and mistrust, with an estimated one in four hackers secretly informing on their peers, a Guardian investigation established. Cyber policing units have had such success in forging online criminals to cooperate with their investigations through the threat of long prison sentences that they have managed to create an army of informants deep inside the hacking community. In some cases, popular illegal forums used by cyber criminals as marketplaces for stolen identities and credit card numbers have been run by hacker turncoats acting as FBI moles. In others, undercover FBI agents posing as carders, hackers specializing in ID theft, have themselves taken over the management of crime forums, using the intelligence gathered to put dozens of people behind bars. So ubiquitous has the FBI informant network become that Eric Corley, who publishes the Hacker Quarterly 2600, has estimated that 25% of hackers in the U.S. may have been recruited by the federal authorities to be their eyes and ears. Owing to the harsh penalties involved and the relative inexperience with the law that many hackers have, they are rather susceptible to intimidation, Corley told The Guardian. It makes for a very tense relationship, said John Young, who runs Cryptome, a website depository for secret documents along the lines of WikiLeaks. There are dozens and dozens of hackers who have been shopped by people they thought they trusted. Now, we include the link to James Corbett's interview with John Young from several months back. You can also hop to 2600.com, and you can also learn more about the feds versus hackers and the recruitment of informers from The Guardian and their further investigation. But you can, I hope, connect those dots and see what goes on behind these networks, whether it's Anonymous or Lulzsec or Al-Qaeda or Jundullah or whatever boogeyman group of the week, thoroughly infiltrated. Because ultimately, if we, as I think, thoroughly gone over on the last 6 years of this show and site, they need to create the action. Because generally, all of us just want life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. They have to generate the attacks. We have a bunch of related DEF CON updates posted below this story about one in four hackers being an FBI informant. Hackers attack FBI partner website. That's right, Atlanta's InfraGuard exposed. More on that from the French agency press. InfraGuard, you may recall from some of the great work from folks like Matthew Rothschild of The Progressive, exposing InfraGuard and their shoot-to-kill license. InfraGuard is basically deputizing all the middle management schmucks who run a critical infrastructure like Walmart and your local banks. So when the rug gets pulled out, they'll be able to 007 it. Meanwhile, PBS website hacked with fake news. More on that from InformationWeek.com. Did hackers deface the Fox News building in New York City? You can watch the video and see. After that cyber attack targeted Lockheed Martin, second defense contractor L3 actively targeted with RSA Secure ID hacks. That's from Threat Level. From the Wall Street Journal, Gmail hack targeted White House. And from the National Terror Alert, cyber attacks can count as an act of war, so perhaps we hadn't read that into the record yet, but there it is. Writer urges internet junkies to switch off and think. And we should. Sony loses $3.2 billion after the PlayStation Network was hacked.
Still down. Still unusable.
I'm going to try to sign in.
Under maintenance.
Under maintenance.
Chikara Yuki, a San Francisco Bay Area native studying in Japan, hasn't been able to get on to the Sony PlayStation Network since it was hacked last month. Sony says, possibly breached, usernames, passwords, and most importantly, credit card numbers of millions of players. Users fumed online, like iReporter Samantha Shields, sarcastically holding out her credit card saying, "Here, just take my identity." And Omekongo Dibigna with plenty to say, not just about the breach, but that Sony management waited a week to inform the public it'd been hacked.
Sony, I hope you're ready for all of the drama that's going to be coming your way, because we who are using PlayStation 3, we are furious, and we're going to bring you nothing but more drama.
That drama, at least financially, only partially evident at Sony's year-end earnings news conference. Sony forecasts the cost of the breach could be approximately $170 million and made this promise to its users. We will focus on strengthening security, says Sony's chief financial officer, and also give a sense of security to our customers as soon as possible.
As far as the communications delay, Sony has said that it needed to clarify what happened before going public. Japan's largest electronics exporter says that its current financial picture is mixed, logging an approximate $3.2 billion loss for the fiscal year, blaming a one-time non-cash tax issue and the earthquake.
Sony is forecasting a return to profit next year, led in part by the strength of its games and network services. After stumbling early in the crisis with customers, analysts predict Sony will manage to recover.
On the back of these efforts by Sony, I think there is a risk, but not so significant at this moment.
So they're making it up to their customers?
I think so.
Customers are not so sure.
Do you think this is going to hurt their bottom line?
Yes, I think it will hurt Sony, since I think less people will... more people feel reluctant to share their credit card information.
Are you ready?
For now, this gamer is playing Super Street Fighter 4 unplugged from the net. A dull, throwback way to game, he says, and one that won't keep him coming back to Sony unless it gets all global users online again soon and keeps its promise of a hack-free network.
Oh, playing Street Fighter like a caveman. Oh, how will we ever survive? That's the thing. The punch in the Facebook that we've called it here. When that I-9-11 comes, it will have people begging. I'll do whatever you want. I'll take whatever controls. I'll get whatever OpenID or Trusted Traveler or whatever crap they're calling it that we've reported for you. It just has different names and different programs. When one fails, they'll change the name and shove it down your throat the next 6 months later. You'll take any loss of privacy, which is essentially an illusion online anyway, just to get back on the PlayStation Network, just to get back on Foursquare or Farmville. But even more headlines. Hackers attack another Sony network and post that data. That's from Reuters. World of Warcraft blamed for divorce as men prefer them to their wives. Meanwhile, the UN report declares internet access a human right. And thank God we have someone like Senator Ron Wyden here in Oregon. Raw Story reporting on his freezing of another internet censorship bill. Meanwhile, Facebook quietly switches on facial recognition technology by default, just as they do so many of their other things, and an Apple patent will cripple devices when in proximity of, quote, a concert or a classified facility. But at least as we speak, Apple's letting me read these headlines to you. And the last headline from allgov.com is unfortunately not a rhetorical tongue-in-cheek question. How could so many crooks have managed to scam the National Security Agency? Because it's a system set up for corruption. Meanwhile, Facebook loses 6 million U.S. users in May. The social network is still growing, but not as fast. Computer World reporting that Facebook may continue to gain users, but the world's biggest social network isn't gaining them as quickly as it had been and is actually losing users in the U.S. I may be one of them soon. A great piece from, and I hadn't mentioned him yet, my man Alan in Omaha. one of our lead editors and writers on cyberspacewar.com. LulzSec, laughing at your security since 2011. Computer hackers Lulz Security, a loosely knit group, announced last Monday their successful hack of Senate computers. Lulz, of course, is internet slang for laughing out loud. A Reuters article presents the government response. Despite the breach, the Sergeant-at-Arms office, which provides security for the Senate, said that the breach had not compromised any individual senator's information. You got to admire the group's audacity from the following brash comments, also from Reuters. We don't like the U.S. government very much, Lulz Security said at the top of their release. This is a small, just-for-kicks release of some internal data from Senate.gov. Is this an act of war, gentlemen? Problem? The comment refers to reports that the military have decided that it could respond to cyber attacks from foreign countries with traditional military force. We just mentioned that for you. John Bumgarner from a think tank, the Cyber Consequences Unit, believes it's an especially embarrassing incident for the Senate since it reveals hackers had administrator-level access to the system. LulzSec seems to be sending the message that they're capable of doing more. But we ask, how can you compromise the already compromised? And of course, the late, great George Carlin would have a field day with this material. Living in a radioactive world, that's right, we are, I am, we're soaking in it, here on the West Coast, depending on what ratings and readings you look at, it's higher or it's lower than the Midwest. And again, we'll make reference to a lot of researchers, a lot of channels, a lot of websites, but just because we mention them doesn't mean we necessarily wholeheartedly endorse them. Just because I've mentioned and referenced Dutch Sense several times in the last several months doesn't mean I'm following him or any of those ridiculous things that people fall down the rabbit hole in this stupid online rabble-rabble garbage. But again, I trust you guys have the discernment. Nuclear power industry executive Arne Gundersen posts invaluable video updates on radiation dangers from the Fukushima disaster. The videos have done much to raise awareness worldwide. Where's the U.S. Surgeon General to warn Americans? This nuclear power executive brings his expertise to the mainstream with an interview by John King, available with a link for you. John King, I believe, on CNN, John King, USA. A surprised Gundersen reports 10 hot particles per day breathed in by the Japanese, but Americans in Seattle breathe in 5. A hot particle is extremely dangerous as it causes damage in close proximity, usually resulting in a necrotic spot in lungs, bones, or digestive tract where it is lodged in the body over time. Hot particles are not easily detected as they are minuscule in size and termed fuel fleas by Gundersen. Living in a radioactive world. Furthermore, last weekend, we had a couple radioactive weekend roundups. As we note, infant death increase recorded in the Pacific Northwest since March. Question mark, due to Fukushima fallout? We have links to a Counterpunch article as well as the CDC's own Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Seattle, Spokane, Boise, Portland, Sacramento, San Fran, Berkeley, and Santa Cruz. Meanwhile, Dutch Sense Geiger counter reads 73.2 clicks per minute in Idaho. Furthermore, links in there to McGill University and the original videos on youtube.com/DutchSense. He even has one from Pendleton, Oregon, reading 55.7. Is this reassuring? We discuss this on the latest New World next week. Are our readings lower than they are in the Midwest? According to some, yes. According to others, no. Do I feel comfortable and safe? No. We even have more on Benjamin Fulford and his allegations of a connection to a stolen nuke from the Kursk, if you remember the Russian sub, the Kursk. That interview was on with Jeff Rentz, and that's posted up. And of course, any kind of mentions of stuff like that gets the people coming out saying, stop talking about Fulford. He's a shill. or is somebody referring to Dutch Sense on YouTube? He's a shrill. Meanwhile, the Missouri River floods the Fort Calhoun, Nebraska nuclear plant. What in the world's going on? A Nebraska nuclear power plant in Fort Calhoun alongside the Missouri River evacuated recently and called in local fire department after a fire broke out. Again, Arnie Gunderson, nuclear power expert, provide a professional insight into the crisis and the simple observation, nuclear plants and sandbags don't mix. Gunderson implies a more serious crisis in a 5 o'clock shadow interview on audioport.org with observation local fire departments are hardly ever called in as plants routinely handle small fires. So there are other interesting connections to this, the no-fly zone over this Nebraska power plant. NCRenegade.com getting into what on earth may be going on at our own nuclear plants in the heartland of America. And we return to the topic we discussed as biblical signs and wonders, but here it is again, a rare eclipse of the midnight sun, this referring to the June 1st eclipse at midnight. With further research from spacedaily.com and even to NASA, auroral displays after the June 7th CME, or the coronal mass ejection, then the June 15th lunar eclipse, which was not visible from North America, and that's the one that the prophecy alert clip that we played near the top of the show was referring to, this blood red moon over Jerusalem, the 44th anniversary and the 44th president. What I find so fascinating being involved in this outwardly over the last 5 or 6 years and inwardly over the last nearly 10 years, again, my own natural curiosity and investigations into what's the video of the plane hitting the Pentagon look like? Through all of that, I think through all of that, I've lost my train of thought. We'll take a moment and continue. With the June 16th DEF CON on cyberspacewar.com, solar threats, hack attacks, and jetpacks. As the solar threat appears to grow, or at least the programming and preparation for it, with claims of we would only have minutes to respond to a massive CME or solar flare, as the governments are planning controlled blackouts, and as the elites are prepping their own contingency plans, theintelhub.com getting into the U.S. and U.K. to cut power in preparation of a massive solar storm. Meanwhile, magnetic levels ebb as scientists note missing sunspot activity. Is it growing or is it not? Meanwhile, mysterious structure discovered on Mars? And that leads us immediately into our first bit of audio satire as NASA finds evidence of humans on the moon.
It's the Onion Radio News. NASA finds evidence of humans on the moon. This is Doyle Redland reporting. NASA astronomers in Dallas, Texas reported evidence today that human beings may have once walked on the moon. High-resolution telescopic images show not only footprints on the moon, but a flag, several golf balls, and numerous spacecraft parts of unknown origin. NASA spokesman Don Jenks.
We're guessing that humans were probably abducted by aliens, dumped on the moon temporarily, and picked up later or something.
Jenks went on to say that the most unusual image picked up from the surface of the moon was that of a plaque bearing the signature of President Richard Nixon, which NASA officials are at a complete loss to explain. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
Meanwhile, a follow-up to a story we reported for you on the previous episode, this new book, Area 51, Closely Held Secrets Revealed in a New Book. There's a video report from Raw Story for you. Meanwhile, U.S. faces legal challenge to all their internet domain seizures, and the anti-whistleblower case collapses. Ex-spy agency official Thomas Drake strikes a plea bargain. And at the very same moment, the U.S. underwrites internet detour around censors. Hat tip to Cryptogon.com, sourcing back to the New York Times. Covertly providing internet so that the freedom fighters can undermine oppressive regimes that, of course, we helped install in the first place and have thoroughly infiltrated both levels of their phony political, spiritual, religious cult paradigm. Meanwhile, Pentagon ramps up cyber war plans. A great new original piece from Tom Burkhart of Anti-Fascist Calling. And it's back to the hack attacks. Let's add even some more in. Notorious hacker group breaks into the Senate server. We mentioned that one. More on that from Fox. Meanwhile, IMF breached by sophisticated hack attack. Anonymous attacks and shuts down a Spanish police website. Hacker group claims credit for invading CIA.gov. Pretty ballsy. Pretty amazing. Quite interesting to see what's going on. And yes, of course, no mention of anything about WikiLeaks and Assange anymore. So those LulzSec hackers inspire a rap song. We were going to play it for you, but I changed my mind and now we're not going to. But the link is there for you to check out for yourself. Meanwhile, there's also a video for you to check out, and it's quite amazing. Personal jetpacks to go on sale by the end of this year, says the inventor. And I'm just going to wait on the hoverboard. And our last bit of audio satire, the government says, ignore that throbbing love orb.
It's the Onion Radio News. Ignore the throbbing love orb. This is Doyle Redland reporting. In a plea for sanity in a time of crisis, governments of the world are urging people everywhere to disregard the gigantic throbbing love orb currently hovering above the planet. UN Security Council member Vishnu Murala delivered this statement to members of the press.
These so-called orbs, beautiful aura, and seemingly boundless compassion for all life are no cause for alarm.
But for now, authorities can do no more than warn the public that little is known about the orb's motives and advise all citizens to resist the indescribably haunting music emanating from its mesmerizing, luminescent surface. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News.
Ah, if only there was a throbbing love orb. Continuing on cyberspacewar.com, the latest amazing documentary from Adam Curtis, the man behind The Power of Nightmares, The Trap, and The Century of the Self, has a new 3-hour documentary called All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace. Unfortunately, like so many other areas of all the other amazing alternative media coming out, I haven't watched this documentary yet, but it's posted up for you on cyberspacewar.com, and I'm going to watch it very soon, and I'm excited about it. Quickly, all the other posts on cyberspacewar.com that we don't have the time to get into, but so many other areas that we touch on that I think attract a different audience from the different sites and the different areas that we cover. It's interesting to see what stories hit and what stories don't. I find sometimes the stories that I would maybe least be interested in, I'll see gets massive interest from some other area. So more on that Clyde Lewis and GroundZeroMedia.org episode, Nazi Lunatic Outposts. And I posted up one of my favorite sources for old time radio, as it's called, and it's called RelicRadio.com. They have tons of other shows, and I have a long time love of old time radio. I used to even run Orson Welles in the Mercury Theater on the air back east on my old college radio station. So you can stream and you can subscribe to all the individual podcasts, suspense, thriller, sci-fi, horror, war, mystery, all those things and more. Classic old-time radio from RelicRadio.com. Space junk, growth industry, or hidden agenda? and a follow-up on the Epic of Gilgamesh, this time a narrated audio version. And the Fort Worth Lights remaining a Fortean phenomena, the first Anunnaki on Earth, the Danish homemade rocket, the Phobos grunt mission, Cassini at Saturn, the Plains Milky Way, Mount Olympus, the Friendship Case, and Space Trackers. All that and so much more available on cyberspacewar.com. And we now move to foodworldorder.com for just a few quick posts. And almost regardless of which site and which area we're covering, it seems to come back to soaking in radiation. Food safety fears grow in Japan on skepticism at radiation testing regime. Kimi Nozaki, a mother of three children living 60 kilometers from the crippled Fukushima nuclear reactors, said she doesn't trust the government's testing program for radiation-contaminated food. Information from the government lacks detail, which makes me even more nervous, said Nozaki, 43, who lives in Fukushima City, about 35 miles from the plant that's been emitting radiation since 3/11 and the world's worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl. 3 months after an earthquake and tsunami crippled the plant, Japan doesn't appear to have a comprehensive food testing regime, said Peter Burns, the former chairman of the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation. Prolonged exposure to radiation in the air, ground, and food can cause leukemia and other cancers, according to the London-based World Nuclear Association. My impression is the monitoring has been a bit piecemeal, Burns said by phone from his home in Melbourne, Australia, on June 14th. The Japanese are usually highly motivated and organized to implement such systems, so I would think that they will get there, but certainly what I've seen to date hasn't been awe-inspiring. Products include spinach, mushrooms, bamboo shoots, tea, milk, plums, and fish have been found to be contaminated with cesium and iodine as far as 360 kilometers from the station. Contamination was detected in 347 food samples from 8 prefectures by June 9th, that according to the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare. Furthermore, on Food World Order, and returning to some of those vegetables that we just mentioned, but now here in a slightly different yet no less disturbing context, the Environmental Working Group has released their 2011 Dirty Dozen.
Apples take the number one spot at the top of this year's so-called Dirty Dozen list. It's compiled by the Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit public health organization. It ranks produce by the amount of pesticide residue on them using data from federal labs. Number two on the list is celery, followed by strawberries, peaches, and spinach. The USDA says the overall pesticide residue levels they found are below the maximum allowed EPA levels. The Produce Trade Association calls the list irresponsible, misleading, and sensational. They worry the list will discourage people from eating fresh produce and diminish the nutrition of many Americans. The Environmental Working Group also has a list out of what they say are the safest fruits and vegetables. Onions, corn, pineapples, avocado, and asparagus round out the top five. They suggest buying organic when it comes to Dirty Dozen produce. Dietitians say if you're concerned, that's not a bad idea.
Then this guide may be a good place to start. You can certainly mix conventional produce with organic produce.
And the nonprofit group admits the pros of eating non-organic fruits and vegetables outweigh the cons. For today's Health Minute, I'm Nanette Sosa.
Aha, so E. coli won't have a significant impact on the organic food industry. A deadly E. coli outbreak that's being blamed on sprouts grown without chemicals probably won't dent people's support for the organic food industry in the long term, that according to London-based analyst OrganicMonitor.com. And we have a few related outbreak updates posted below this story on foodworldorder.com. 90% of the sprout contamination conventional, not organic. It has been linked to factory farm livestock production. So again, regardless of what area we're discussing, whether that's hack attacks or terrorists or food, that's a false flag. You see that? New questions rise in the cause and trajectory of the Germany E. coli outbreak. That's from the New York Times, but breaking it down and putting it together, quite simply. Forensic evidence emerges that European E. coli superbug was bioengineered to produce human fatalities. And wouldn't you know it, UK agency warned of terrorist threat to the food supply. And a little flashback to January of 2009, Al-Qaeda bungled arms experiment. And one last note, despite its efforts, even Whole Foods can't keep GMOs out of the products it sells. And we move to foodpoisonjournal.com. As WSLS recently reported that the author, Jeff Benedict, provided the First Lady and the President and Secretary Vilsack and Secretary Sebelius, along with every member of the House and Senate, a copy of his new book, Poisoned. The book tells the story from an attorney's experience and perspective of the last major headlining E. coli outbreak at Jack in the Box in 1993. The book, released in May, couldn't come at a better time to educate the public on food safety concerns. There's so many other areas to get into here that we don't have time to flesh out. Bemoaning the fact that, oh, the Food Safety Modernization Act that passed, Congress might cut funding. And they did. And fortunately for us, they did. I think we're basically at a situation where the less Congress does, the better. You know, I always enjoyed the pyramid for its symbolism, but perhaps on so many other levels, there is a great unveiling going on. There is a disclosure. It is being manifest in some way, shape, or form. But the food pyramid is being replaced with a plate-shaped logo. And, you know, and again, I always loved mypyramid.gov.
Senior medical correspondent Elizabeth Cohen is here. So Elizabeth, the pyramid is no more. Like, this pyramid is going to be disappearing. That's why we said RIP. It's been around for almost 20 years. And ta-da, what we're going to have now is a dinner plate. And we don't know exactly what it's going to look like, Carol, because it hasn't been officially unveiled yet. But CNN has gotten word that the plate will be divided so that you'll see that half of what you eat every day is supposed to be fruits and veggies, smaller portions of a protein and a grain, and then a little bit of dairy off to the side. And they're really hoping that this icon sticks in people's heads better than the pyramid did. Like,
I know, I was just going to ask you, what was so wrong with the pyramid anyway?
Well, you know, take a look at it. It's not exactly the finest public health message this country has ever generated. I'll just put it that way. First of all, the stuff you're not supposed to eat is at the top, and that's sweets and fats. And usually we think of the top as the best, so it's counterintuitive. And also, Carol, you can see there's this heavy emphasis on breads and grains. That's at the bottom, the biggest portion. And then fruits and vegetables are smaller than grains, which doesn't really make any sense, since experts, you know, nutritionists say you're supposed to eat lots of fruits and vegetables. So it just, it didn't convey the message very well. You didn't just look at it and go, oh, now I get what I'm supposed to do.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out who actually ever looked at the pyramid, because I mean, I learned it in school, but it's not like, oh my gosh, how do I eat? I'm going to go to the pyramid.
Exactly. I actually mentioned this to my daughters the other day, and they said, oh yeah, the pyramid, that thing, we learned about it in school. What was that again? Like, it really didn't sink into their heads. They're hoping that something like this, which is so much simpler, will really make more of an impact.
I'm sure it will, but will Americans really pay attention to what exactly it's suggesting?
Right. I mean, that's a legitimate question. This is not how Americans eat. Americans do not, for the most part, fill half their plate up with fruits and vegetables. It's going to take a lot more than an icon, even a really good icon, to get people to change their ways. They need to think of some other strategies, too.
That's right. I'm thinking of moms all over America. Now, honey, this is how you're supposed to eat. See that plate?
Thank you, Elizabeth. I appreciate it.
Furthermore, on foodworldorder.com, another one bites the dust. Yes, that's right. You may not have been aware, but the real American dream is selling out your passion and ideas to corporate America. And the latest one to go down was the much-beloved, independent Portland coffee company called Stumptown. the long and short of it, and there was a lot of back and forth and up and down all around here in Portland, and the way it's basically shaken out, the selling of Stumptown. Industry sources say Stumptown coffee has been sold. More on this story from our own Willamette Week, one of our free alternative quote-unquote weeklies. You can hit the stories on wweek.com. The Willamette is, of course, the river that separates the parts of Portland here. But it's done. It's gone. A hedge hunter called TSG has basically bought 90% of Stumptown. They specialize in flipping companies. Buy them up, whore them out, and sell them for way overinflated price to corporations that, of course, collaborated with the Nazis like Coca-Cola and IBM, and that's how they roll. So I used to, for a while, because we had a sort of campaign at the grocery store that I work at, where we had a little badge that said, my favorite local product is, and everybody kind of picked their own individual thing and filled it in. My favorite local product used to be Stumptown Coffee, but because no one can seem to resist the sway of the almighty dollar, here, take my idea and dream. Now, Dwayne Sorensen, the guy who ran Stumptown, said, I always just wanted to make it the biggest company, you know, huge. So maybe he's really not a sellout, because ultimately, that's the question you have to ask. You have to have integrity in the first place. Ag Department now allows schools to buy local fruits and veggies. Meanwhile, the FDA sends U.S. Marshals to seize elderberry juice concentrate because it's deemed an unapproved drug. A very telling piece on a green blog on the New York Times called Reverend Malthus and the Future of Food. Meanwhile, world hunger issues to grow as food prices double, study says. Meanwhile, food prices change world diets, study says. Meanwhile, Europe braces for serious crop losses and blackouts. And United Natural Foods International divests its non-foods business. That I found interesting because they're one of our distributors where I work. Meanwhile, raw milk gets a raw deal from the feds. That article from SeattleGlobalJustice.org, and thank you for sending me that article. Meanwhile, Maine passes a joint resolution on state food sovereignty. That's from Food Freedom. And MedPage Today saying fast food near schools, not an obesity risk for teens. Yeah, it's not going to raise it having a McDonald's nearby because there's already McDonald's and fast food and crap inside the school. And just to ratchet up the level of insanity, how about edible RFID tags tracking your food from beginning to your end?
What if there were a way to embed data directly into food? Printable RFID tags will replace barcodes on food packaging. The technology of edible RFID tags is evolving and already in use for medical purposes. This way, each intake will be tagged. This technology will enable a system we call NutraSmart. In this system, the whole supply chain is tracked. By tagging each product with RFID, shopping at supermarkets will be automated, and at home, our fridge will be able to warn when a product goes bad. Our ovens will be fully automated, and by scanning our food, they'll start the appropriate cooking process. Another part of this system is our smart plate, a plate that reads our food and works as an invisible diet management system. When a cupcake is placed on the plate, it is scanned by an RFID reader inside. This RFID reader is invisible to the user, integrated in the body of the plate. The reader is programmed to monitor every product that's eaten from the plate. An LED light hidden under the veneer breathes up to give a short visual correspondence. Via Bluetooth connection, the embedded information is transferred to his mobile devices. Besides nutrition information like calories or fat, the user can also learn more about his food, about its food miles, or its trading history. A sushi roll could tell us about its heritage and its ingredients. For people with food allergies, the smart plate can send hazard alerts about dangerous ingredients and stop us eating things that might harm us. This system aims to become the future medium between food intake and knowledge. It extracts data directly from food and creates a new perception of what we're going to eat. NutraSmart, revolutionizing nutrition management.
In other news, Soylent Green is made of people. Meanwhile, green tea exports banned due to high radiation levels. That is, of course, out of Japan from the Telegraph reporting. And we close out foodworldorder.com with Farmageddon.
They're actually going onto the farm and telling farmers how to grow things. I've been through 4 pregnancies. I could smoke through all of them. And yet I can't go to a farmer near me and purchase this amazing, healthful, nutrient-dense, fresh milk.
Raw milk from South Carolina, USDA grade licensed dairy, a imminent health hazard according to the state of Georgia.
They even took the sheep that I had brought over from New Zealand, and they took them out to Iowa and they killed them for a disease that doesn't exist to this day.
What I saw from at the top of the stairs was a man right here around the corner with his arm like this and a gun pointing up at me.
They came with the director of milk control, the assistant director, and our inspector, and they all came and pretended they were just going to do an inspection, and then they did a seizure.
They terrorized the children, took the farmer away in handcuffs.
And it was a SWAT-type team raid, which included the FBI, the FDA, the CDFA, and the health department, along with half a dozen sheriffs.
We were just recently raided again for the third time, 6:30 in the morning, knock on the door, and my kids again ousted from their bed.
Every time there is a major shakeup in the food system, local food takes a hit.
Good God. That's all our coverage on foodworldorder.com. For all that and so much more, go check out the site. And again, if you'd like to get involved in any way, in any area, send me an email, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. Becoming your own media monarchy. That's the idea. Now, as we transition into the last half hour of this episode 221, mere hours after I finished the previous episode 2 weeks ago before our hiatus, I learned late that Friday night, May 27th, that Gil Scott Heron, the godfather of rap, died at the age of 62. Gil Scott Heron, dubbed the godfather of rap for his mix of poetry and music, died Friday, May 27th, in New York. His publicist at XL Records said he was 62. It was not immediately known what killed Scott Heron, who was best known for the 1970 song "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised," a politically and socially charged song that examined the African-American condition in America at the time, and the song was even banned by some radio stations. This article goes on, and I've posted it in its entirety and filled in a lot of the links. So you can go read about these albums, read about the history, listen to the albums, see why even second-rate hacks like Common and Kanye sample his music, because like any corporate behemoth, they want to align themselves with the real. But if you haven't heard Revolution Will Not Be Televised, if you haven't heard Whitey on the Moon, if you haven't heard Watergate Blues or No Knock, some of those songs perhaps we've played in the past on Media Monarchy. I definitely know I played Gil Scott Heron on WSHC, the station I was a music director at back east, and hopefully turned a lot of folks on to Gil Scott Heron back there. But right here, let's listen to a track that's a little bit brighter, a little bit more positive, and I know I need it. Gil Scott Heron, Lady Day, and Coltrane.
Ever feel kind of down and out? You don't know just what to do. Living all of your days in darkness, let the sun shine through. Plastic minds are on their way to don't get a help quick, you won't make it through the day. Or could you call on Lady Day? Or could you call on John Coltrane now? Cause they'll watch your troubles, 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 your troubles away. They'll watch your troubles away. Watch your troubles away. Your troubles, your troubles, your troubles, your troubles away.
From the album Free Will, released in August 1972, that was the one and only, the late, the great Gil Scott-Heron with Lady Day and Coltrane. And yes, music can help wash your troubles away, my friends. Remaining on this episode 221 of Media Monarchy are two massive news purges that I'm going to do my best to slam together. As the tables turn, and our city used to be such a beautiful place. We'll begin with our 9/11 updates. Buckle up. 9/11 mastermind KSM charged again in Guantanamo, and we learned that the nickname for the CIA's bin Laden team was the Manson Family. Furthermore, new documents claim intel on bin Laden and al-Qaeda targets was withheld from Congress's 9/11 probe. More on that and other bombshell pieces coming out of this truthout.org article. Al-Qaeda flying planes into the WTC and the Pentagon was foreseeable. Washington's blog.com extrapolating on that piece from Truthout. Further questions from 911blogger.com. The mystery of the helicopter flying around the Pentagon before the attack on 9/11. The Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg says the government has ordered the media not to cover 9/11. Meanwhile, the New York City 9/11 Memorial Museum may cost $20 to get in. Meanwhile, the New York City Department of Buildings has no records for pre-9/11 WTC elevator rebuild, which was one of the, quote, largest, most sophisticated at the time. That, thanks to the great FOIA work of Aidan Monahan. We now move to BioWars EnviroHealth updates. Germany decides to abandon nuclear power by 2022. Japanese seniors volunteer for suicide nuclear jobs. We have raw video of the Chilean volcanic eruption. The record-breaking U.S. tornado season has left hundreds dead. Arizona fire, at time of this posting, was raging for the 12th day, torching an area two times the size of Chicago and forcing the evacuation of thousands. I believe folks are being slowly let back into those areas. Measles outbreak blamed at highest levels. Furthermore, Japan City to give radiation counters to children. This story is Daily Dosimeters, the first story we cover on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. 34,000 children to wear radiation dosimeters around the clock for 3 months. Radiation hotspots hinder Japan response to the nuclear crisis. Electrical fire knocks out spent fuel cooling at Nebraska nuke plant. We covered that for you just a little bit ago on Cyberspace War. And lastly, the government releases a partial list of chemicals found in oil dispersants. Remember one of those other environmental catastrophes? But that was last year. The drug war updates. When Coke and Monsanto, well, I should clarify that. When cocaine and Monsanto's Roundup collide, the war on drugs becomes a genetically modified war on science. More on that from Blacklisted News. Michael Lukes switches sides as drug maker's lawyer. That piece from the New York Times getting into, of course, the revolving door. Sometimes you work for the medical industry, and sometimes you act like in a limited hangout way, you're really sticking it to them. Government tracking medical marijuana users in database. That's from the IntelHub.com. Mexican cartels have military weapons because, of course, the DEA and Border Patrols let them walk, and that's how they get there. And we're going to have to dump that disc of bed music. Make that note. Furthermore, on the Drug War, the underground website where you can buy any drug imaginable. This story is from Threat Level, and the website is Silk Road. Get it? Furthermore, on the Drug War, Mexico drug war spills across the U.S. border. A pretty graphic and amazing piece from Newsmax, The Collapse of Mexico, Its Civil War Comes to America. Meanwhile, billions more wasted on anti-drug contracts in Latin America. Representative Steve Cohen out of Tennessee says the war on drugs has been a terrible mistake. And he's right. And get a load of this. Scott's Miracle-Gro looks to help people grow weed.
Scott's Miracle-Gro wants to get into the medical marijuana business, branching out from Weed Killer. The Wall Street Journal says Scott's wants to help people grow killer weed. Now, the paper says Scott's trying to break out from depending on Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart to sell its products, since retailers aren't expanding as fast as they used to. Well, medical marijuana is illegal under federal law, but it is legal in more than 16 states.
Chief executive of Scott's Miracle-Gro, Jim Hagedorn, told the Wall Street Journal Tuesday that the company is considering entering the medical marijuana market to help boost sales of lawn and garden products, especially Weed Killer. Hagedorn told the newspaper, quote, "I want to target the pot market. There's no good reason we haven't." Scott saw a 5% increase in sales last year to $2.9 billion. The company relies heavily on sales at three key retailers, Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart stores, for almost two-thirds of its revenue. With these three retailers cautious to open new stores, Scott's is looking elsewhere, asking his regional salesmen to look for smaller pockets of growth like the medical marijuana market.
Our last couple of drug war notes. Magic mushrooms' positive effects lasting over a year, say researchers. That story from Raw Story, and our own flashback for you goes back to July 2008 on Media Monarchy. Study shows spiritual effects of magic mushrooms. And they're natural, and they grow on their own, and they're illegal. On to Econo Crash. And on, especially being on a hiatus and trying to get away from the news a little bit, I rely even more on news tips from folks. So again, huge thanks to my man Robert at work, who's a great news hound for me and turned me on to this and many of the other stories we've covered on this episode 221. Sweet justice as the tables turned as deputies and movers show up at a bank to seize property for the homeowners.
Only on Wink tonight, the tables are turned. Instead of Bank of America foreclosing on a home, a homeowner has deputies foreclose on the bank.
Bank of America filed foreclosure papers on a homeowner who didn't owe a dime. They paid for their house with cash.
They still live at the Bank of America branch on Davis Boulevard in Naples with this story you'll see only on Wink tonight.
This is about a family who fought back and won. Their foreclosure nightmare started when they bought a house in the Golden Gate Estates owned by Bank of America. Like you said, they paid cash, so they never had a mortgage. Well, Bank of America fouled it up somewhere along the lines and actually tried to foreclose on the family. And what happened today, you're just going to have to see to believe. Movers, a truck, and an armed deputy, all while a nervous homeowner stands by and waits. This is normally what you'd see when a person's being foreclosed on and their property seized by a bank. But today, it's the other way around.
They've ignored our calls, ignored our letters. Legally, this is the next step to get my clients compensation.
A Collier County judge said Bank of America had to pay Maureen Nyerges and her husband's legal fees after the bank tried to foreclose on their Golden Gate Estates property. But they paid cash. The courts agreed they never had a mortgage to begin with. After more than 5 months, the bank still hadn't paid up. So the homeowner's attorney did just what the bank would do to get their money, seize their assets.
I instructed the deputy to go in and take desks, computers, copiers, filing cabinets, including cash in the drawers.
Outside the bank, several deputies stood by with movers ready to start hauling out the bank's office supplies and furniture. Inside, the homeowner's attorney was locked out of the bank manager's office by deputies, while the bank manager tried to figure out what to do.
He was visibly shaken, having two sheriff's deputies sitting across your desk and a lawyer standing up behind them, demanding whatever assets are in the bank. It can be intimidating, but so is having your home foreclosed on when it's wasn't right.
After about an hour, the bank finally cut a check.
As a foreclosure defense attorney, sweet justice, because this is a symptom of a larger problem.
Now, the homeowner's attorney says that he sees mistakes all the time in foreclosure court where banks do not do their due diligence, and it winds up becoming a very lengthy process for the homeowners. He says he can only think of one other time where an attorney, the deputies, and a U-Haul came to a bank before ready to seize property. That was in Tampa. As far as Bank of America, they issued a statement saying that they apologize for the wait on the payment. They issued a notice to pay from the attorney that was working on the case on their side, but they didn't know the attorney went out of business. We'll be reporting live here in Naples. Renee Solwink News now.
All right, Renee, thank you today.
Continuing the econo crash, U.S. house price fall beats the Great Depression slide. We're worse now than we were then. California SWAT team breaks into a house, detains a family over student loan default. That's right. All the unconstitutional government organizations all have their own little SWAT teams, all their little boss hogs ready to throw you around. Meanwhile, budget cuts force a California police and firemen to watch a man drowned. And a specious bit again from Sorcha Fall. Russia says IMF chief jailed for discovering all the gold in the U.S. is gone. A traitor, an FBI witness, and then a suicide. Another coincidental suicide in the econo crash bankster scheme, as we have been tracking over the last 3 years, because that's the new scheme. It's even getting kind of old now. You know they're moving on to their next idea. Senate lets the Fed slash debit card fees paid to the banks. And lastly on the econo crash, the Federal Reserve cartel, the eight families. More on that from the Intel Hub. And we get into geopolitics quickly. Major Israeli shipping firm accused by Washington of doing illicit business with Iran. And the U.S.-Canada Perimeter Security and an Integrated North American Command, Dana Gabriel, be your own leader, documenting the coming North American Union. Syria's ambassador to France resigned on live TV. And the BBC disinfo piece, Bilderberg Mystery, why do people believe in cabals? And the last note on geopolitics and the Bilderbergs, Paul Joseph Watson gives the breakdown on the full official attendee list of the 2011 Bilderberg meeting. History mystery, photo gallery time, weird government Unabomber auction winds down. Yes, you could have bought that hoodie and those sunglasses. Dozens of pages disappear from intelligence file on Tommy Douglas. More on that from Canadian Press. Jack Kevorkian, Dr. Death, assisted suicide advocate, dies at the age of 83. And every article you saw, every obituary mentions Oregon in the first paragraph. And Elmer Geronimo Pratt, jailed Black Panther leader, dies at the age of 63, yet another victim of COINTELPRO informants against the Black Panthers. And we mentioned Daniel Ellsberg a little bit ago, as he, of course, said that the media has been ordered not to cover 9/11 truth. The U.S. government has now finally declassified his Pentagon papers, and the link is there, and you can download everything as a PDF, and I did it, and you should too. Meanwhile, NSA declassifies a 200-year-old book and all kinds of other ephemera. On to the media and memes. Andrew Gold, the singer of Thank You for Being a Friend, dead at the age of 59. James Arness, Marshall Matt Dillon of Gunsmoke, dies at the age of 88. John Elway sounds a sour note about a band with the same name. I love band names that appropriate other things, like John Cougar Concentration Camp and REO Speed Dealer. And OswaldThePlay.com. My man Tim Intravia, a guy I went to college with who always was doing crazy stuff that seemed like, man, you should just get involved with the theater department. And, oh, God, he's in Manhattan doing this weird Orange Man thing and street theater. He is playing Lee Harvey Oswald in an amazing show, and you can watch a brief clip and check out some of the pieces surrounding it. So a guy I know that I went to school with, another great way of seeing those folks that you've known for a while finally kind of break through and do the thing that they've always wanted to do and that they've always been passionate about and that they've always been uncompromising about, to have those successes, little or large as they may be. I love those people, and they inspire me. And unfortunately, on a different note, AmericanSansCoolots.com notes that the alternative media blackout is coming, and soon. A couple of other media meme notes. Carl Gardner, the lead singer of the Coasters, dies at the age of 83, and they had so many songs, Searching, Youngblood, Charlie Brown. But let's take a quick 1 minute and 47 second blast of classic pop from Yakety Yak.
Take out the papers and the trash, or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more. Yakety Yak!
Don't go back.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust car with that broom.
Don't go back.
You just put on your coat and hat and walk yourself to the laundromat. And when you finish doing that, bring in the dog and put out the cat. Yak-a-yak!
Don't go back. Don't talk back.
Yakety yak, yakety yak. Yakety yak, yakety yak. Yakety yak, yakety yak.
The Coasters, Yakety Yak, Carl Gardner, the last surviving member of the group, dies at the age of 83. And it's just even still amazing to think that some of those folks were even still around. Laura Ziskin, producer of Pretty Woman and Spider-Man, dies at the age of 61, and we flip to Murder and Mayhem. Criminals in police clothing in Florida. Criminals pose as police more frequently and for more violent ends. Five dead, one wounded in Yuma, Arizona, divorce gone bad. The latest twists and turns in the Casey Anthony murder trial. That was posted a week or so ago, and it's gotten even more retardo. As the Casey Anthony distraction grows, BobTuskin.com breaking it down. And the update we have for you this morning, fight among spectators at the Casey Anthony trial because there's only so many slots to get in and watch this bread and circus unfold before the dumbed down masses. But on a different note, 5 months after the shooting, U.S. Congresswoman leaves the hospital.
Another major milestone to tell you about just came in tonight. Congresswoman Gabby Giffords is out of the hospital. She has been released 5 months after she was shot in the head. The hospital says that we have no doubt that she will continue to make significant strides in her recovery, and she will go home in Houston with her husband, Mark Kelly, continuing outpatient rehab near that city.
So I'm proven wrong. My speculation that something shady was going on there is apparently wrong because now she's out and they've shown photos of her. But nonetheless, the Jared Lee Loughner psychological operation will continue. Last couple murder and mayhem notes. Grandma's ashes donated to Goodwill. Way to go, Flint, Michigan. And the woman who threatened to blow up the DC Metro train is getting the mental health evaluation that she needs. And hockey fans riot in Vancouver after their tribe loses. Pretty lame, Vancouver. And a German blimp pilot sacrificed his life to save passengers. That video is on Raw Story. And we get to our Obama-Saya updates, and we'll tie in all the other little Congress critters as well. And unfortunately, we've already dumped a few of them, and we're going to have to dump pretty much the rest of them. But I don't want to miss this one, because every time I hear him, I like him a little more. Lupe Fiasco notes, Obama is the biggest terrorist.
Your latest album, Lasers, and the single Words I Never Said, is pretty politically charged.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually an anomaly for a pop artist. You realize that, right? And I mean, you do mention, though, going against Obama.
My fight against terrorism, to me, the biggest terrorist is Obama in the United States of America. You know, so for me, it's like I'm trying to fight the terrorism that's actually causing the other forms of terrorism. You know, the root causes of the terrorism. It's just stuff that the U.S. government allows to happen, you know, and the foreign policies that we have in place in different countries that inspire people to become terrorists, mm-hmm. you know. And it's easy for us because it's really just some oil, which we can really get on our own.
So who are you looking to vote for
in
the 2012 presidential race?
I don't vote.
Oh, you don't vote?
No, I don't vote.
Really?
No, I don't vote. But I don't get involved in
political.
Why? Because it's meaningless, to be honest.
Really?
Because you vote, first of all, you know, I'm a real big believer. If I'm going to vouch for someone, then I'm going to stand behind everything that they do, right? So that could be you, that could be the cameraman. Like, if I'm going to say I stand behind this person and write on a piece of paper that says, hey, I stand for this person, then I have to take responsibility for everything that he does, because that's just how I am as a human being, right? So politicians aren't going to do that, because I don't want you to bomb some village in the middle of nowhere. You
know, so what if no one voted? What would happen, though?
Who knows? Let's try it out and see what happens.
Indeed. Let's try it out and see what happens. Lupe Fiasco, of course, in the past several weeks, we've played two tracks from his record, Lasers, state-run radio featuring Matt Mahaffey of Self, and kicked it off with the amazing single, and there's even a video for it, for Words I Never Said. And I think, my friends, what we're going to do is cut it short right there, because I could continue to plow forward, but it's just going to get more truncated and more bit-sized, bite-sized as things go on. So there are more Obamasiah updates with Ron Paul and all the other fake conservatives, not counting and not including him in that. One of my friends I'll mention here, as I do want to mention, as I try and mention at the end of these episodes, that twitter.com/MediaMonarchy is another great outlet. As far as we know, they haven't been gobbled up by some intelligence-connected multinational corporation yet, so I kind of dig it. It's a nice bite-sized form, and it's just another great way to kind of spread ideas and information and connect up with folks. But one of my good friends noted after the recent GOP debate that had Ron Paul essentially winning according to all the audience polls, but you wouldn't really know it from the amazing glowing coverage that Michelle Bachmann and Mormon Romney get. Yeah, there's a Mormon meme as well. It's interesting to see still to this day, now in June 17th, 2011, how much the media tries to avoid discussing Ron Paul, and even more importantly, the ideas that Ron Paul discusses. So my good friend was tweeting to me, and you can go watch and check out that exchange on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. Am I throwing my support behind Ron Paul? I guess at this point, yeah, I would moderately support him, but no way near as strong and strenuously as and excitedly as in 2008. I think it's a different game plan now, and there's so many avenues that are rigged, just like Lupe Fiasco just said. So as I was saying, there's still a bunch of other Obamasiah updates, Oregon oddities, police state international updates, the FBI digging through your trash, terror drills going on in Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia, and also the film Super 8, which I did go check out last Saturday, and I also saw the new Woody Allen film Midnight in Paris. Super 8 was shot entirely in Weirton, West Virginia, so hopefully that gives a little bit of spotlight to my beloved home state of West Virginia. Then, as we noted at the top of the show, perhaps feeling a little homesick, city kind of gets to me. Kind of starts to drive me nuts, and I may need to move to a cabin in North Dakota for a couple years. But we're not going to do that yet, my friends. We're going to continue with all the amazing alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups right here on MediaMonarchy.com. This has been episode 221. I thank you guys for rejoining me after the hiatus. Your support, monetary, spiritual, news tips, all those things, it all means the world. This has been episode 221. June 17th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups, featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes and so much more. Send mystics to mediamonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.